Hi, you're listening to The Wing Woman, brought to you by best mates and journalists Frankie Braddon and Charlie Gowans Eglinton. That's me. Frankie, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Enjoying this very sunny week.
What have your highlights been thus far?
I have a new Instagram follower.
Just the one?
Just the one. It is at the Panhandle Glove.
Controversial. What is this?
Haute couture for the exclusive table, creating the Panhandle Gloves for the modern and sophisticated kitchen and dining areas.
Is it a glove to actually handle a pan?
It's like a little padded tube that goes on a pan handle.
Right.
And I don't know why they followed me, because cooking in pans isn't my niche.
I thought they might be gloves to like buskin, you know, now that we're in a pandemic and like you've got to be more hygienic when you're pan handling.
Oh yeah, sure. Or opening handles on doors in a pandemic.
Oh, in fact, handling anything in a pandemic is pan handling.
Exactly. No, no, unfortunately not that. That's a good business idea that we should pursue.
What are the colours and finishes?
Well, my favourite is a gingham. Obviously, I've looked. Because I was like, you're following moi, I should have a little look at you. So my favourite is gingham, which comes in blue, green and red. I mean, they're very stylish. I can't say I've thought much about panhandle gloves, in my lifetime. But if you are going to buy a panhandle glove, I'd recommend that one.
Great. Great. Is that the sole highlight of your week, or have we got anything to add to that?
I know, that's a bit sad, isn't
it? No judgment here.
I mean, the weather's obviously been the highlight, but I've just been boiling hot. And I think my ankles might have swollen into cankerlesque form just because it's so hot. And maybe it might be a bit of pregnancy stuff.
Yeah, that
I'm
is
not
a pregnancy
sure.
thing, right? You can blame pregnancy for that.
Yeah, so no ankle straps for me. Devastated. I've ordered some paints. I've succumbed to the pandemic art scene.
I ordered pastels at the beginning and I've still not cracked them open.
Well, I have cracked mine open. So I bought some watercolours, which is not normally my medium.
Oh, no, I can see watercolour for you.
Really?
I'm sure you did that at uni.
Great. Uni, I was all about an acrylic.
Oh, God. I hate acrylic.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I loved them.
So immovable.
Fast drying, yeah. But I'm such a smudger that, like, things just need to dry really quickly. Otherwise, I risk ruining them. So acrylics were my vibe. But I've gone for a sophisticated watercolour. I had a beautiful paper poppy in the garden that I attempted to draw. You know, you're just like, I'll remember how to do this. My first, you know, I'll just put paintbrush to paper and whip up like a casual masterpiece.
We went to art school.
You know what I mean? It's in the blood. No, it's in the blood. Oh my God. And it's horrible. I've drawn a horrible thing. It's quite vaginal, which, you know, Georgia O'Keeffe, love it. But it's not particularly attractive. So I was a little bit upset with myself. All vaginas are beautiful, but my watercolour depiction of a vagina is not very beautiful. So I'm a little bit upset with myself.
I have done illustrations on the front of cards. So I did one for Father's Day. I did a little drawing of a vase full of flowers, an urn full of flowers.
Lovely.
Dad liked it. And for my friend Sophie's birthday, I drew her on the front of a birthday card. But I just drew her outline and she was facing away from me, and I based it on a picture that I took of her on holiday last summer. Her husband was like, is this of Sophie? And thought it was recognisable. So therefore I did a good job, I think.
Nothing nicer than getting a hand-drawn card.
Hand-drawn card is just gorgeous. Yeah, all right. Artistic.
Very. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. How about you?
Pretty exciting over here. First of all, I'd like to report that I went to Dusty Knuckle Bakery on Monday. Somebody on our Instagram had recommended their pain au chocolat for our official pain au chocolat guide in Hackney and Islington. No, didn't make the top three. It didn't shake anyone from any podiums. It was good.
Talk us through it.
It was very classic. So the outer shell, that top layer of pastry, had a bit of a shine on it. You know, and it's kind of, it's been washed, I think, with an egg wash, maybe. That's what I'm imagining anyway. Which is nice, but actually, it was just like the Panashocks of my childhood, perhaps. Nothing wrong with that. You know, it was a classic Panashock art. It was good. The chocolate was good. Double bar of chocolate, which I appreciated, but they were placed too close together. So it was all just nestled in one corner. Oh, I don't know. We've just set the bar so, so high.
I know.
With what we've already got.
Okay, so there's nothing to write home about. You wouldn't kick it out of bed, but you're not inviting it for a second date.
No. I'm not going to travel specifically for that.
Fair enough.
So I just thought I should get that out of the way first.
Very valuable information. Yeah, thank you.
Secondly, I bought some tickets.
What?
I bought tickets for next April or May or something ridiculous to see David Sedaris at the Royal Festival Hall.
Amazing.
Who's an author who I love. It was actually supposed to be this year and it's been postponed another year. And I've been looking at other tickets of postponed events. I think a lot of places aren't scheduling new events until they know the lay of the land. But obviously any talks or gigs that were supposed to happen are now being rescheduled. So I'm quite enjoying buying tickets with an eye to the future and thinking that time will come around.
Very hopeful.
But, and I want to ask your opinion on this, how do you feel about everything reopening? Because our favourite restaurant, Jolene, our local, which we often pop into on our socially distance walks together and get a coffee and a pan of chocolate, what else? Or perhaps the Lamington. They've got Anzac cookies today.
They do lovely pizza.
They do lovely pizza. But pre-pandemic, we used to eat in there for dinner as often as we could afford to because it's absolutely lovely. They have announced that they are now taking bookings for dinner starting in July, going right through to September. And obviously they'll be doing distancing. They're just doing two sittings a night and they're doing a set menu. So those are all the precautions that they're putting in place to make sure that they can do this safely. But I don't know, they opened up the bookings yesterday, I think. And I'm sure there'll be a huge rush on them because everyone's so excited to get back to some degree of normality and be able to eat in a restaurant again. But even in September, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel. And I'm just a bit anxious about going and sitting in a restaurant. I would love to, but I don't need to. It's not essential, is it? And I want to support them, and we do support them by shopping there. And obviously, you should support your small local businesses. But I'm just a little bit anxious at the idea of actually going and sitting in a restaurant.
I know. Well, also, the joy of going out for dinner is that it's relaxing. You're not having to cook. Someone else is doing all the work for you. The only pressure you have is to decide what you're having off a menu. So I think, for me, at the moment, it feels like that relaxing element isn't going to be there because you're thinking, oh, I'm in an enclosed space. Has this been cleaned properly? Has this fork been cleaned that I'm about to put in my mouth? And I'm sure it has, and I'm sure every establishment that's opening is taking all the precautions that they possibly can. But you can't help. I mean, look, we've just lived through lockdown. We've lived through months of being in incredible high alert. So I think this is going to be such an adjustment coming back out of it all. The pubs thing has got me thinking. So it was yesterday. So we're recording this on Friday, on Wednesday. Sorry, you put me off there. Charlie just whipped off her bra mid-sentence.
Sorry,
I'm like, what day of the week is it?
I am wearing a dress over the top, but I just whipped it off. I am wearing a sweat bra already, so it didn't seem necessary to wear an actual bra just for the purposes of this recording.
And when you say sweat bra, a bra made from sweat?
Yeah, just underneath my boobs, I've got like a nice sweat bra.
Little band.
Because it's very warm.
I had one of those yesterday. It was delightful.
Sorry, continue. We're recording
this on Wednesday. Boris announced yesterday, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
Yes. That pubs are opening, cinemas are opening, restaurants are opening, museums are opening. And obviously this is all to get the economy back up and running, which is so important. you know, if the economy crashes, that's so many people's livelihoods put at risk. And obviously poverty kills as well. It's not just coronavirus, which is putting people's lives at risk.
Well, and it could take years and years for the country to recover. I mean, recession struck when we were at university, when we had just started university, and we're still seeing the effects of that, but it meant we graduated into a massively depressed job market. So another depression is scary.
Governments all around the world are trying to strike, or having to strike, this balance between keeping everybody safe health-wise in terms of protecting them from coronavirus, but then also getting the economy up and running and making sure that infrastructures are still robust and we can function normally as quickly as possible. So it's a headache of a balance. I just found the pubs interesting because obviously we Brits love a pub, and everyone I've spoken to over the past few months, you know, what's the one thing you're missing? It's a trip to the pub. I would normally be absolutely gagging to get to the pub. I feel like
it'd be slightly wasted on you at the moment.
It would be slightly wasted for me. I mean, you know, as much as I wish coronavirus absolutely never happened and it's fucked up so many things, I kind of, like, the one thing I'm like, okay, that was a little bit convenient, is that the pub's shut as soon as I found out I was pregnant. So I was like, thank you, world, for making it not feel like I just was the only one that couldn't go to the pub. So I just feel like that I mean, we live in an area where there's pubs. I've got two pubs down the road from me and another three within 500, 600 metres. So I expect those to be full. That makes me feel nervous. I think especially when you've had a drink, the idea of social distancing might go a little bit out the window. There don't tend to be lots and lots of staff in a pub. You know, there's a couple of people behind the bar and maybe someone picking up glasses. So how is that going to work in terms of keeping it won't be at full capacity, the pubs, because I'm sure they're having to do some sort of social distancing measures, although obviously that distance now been reduced to 1 metre as opposed to 2. But even so, like, how are you going to police that? When people have drinks, they need a wee. You know, you need a wee loads when you're sinking pints and bottles of wine. So how is that going to work? The queue for pubs, toilets are big at the best of times if it's a Friday night or a Saturday night. I'm sure this is everything that pub landlords are asking themselves. But that just feels, unless a pub has a giant garden and you social distance the tables, I just don't know. We have got to come out of this. But I think for a lot of people, it's this transition phase now that we're saying, okay, a lot of life is opening back up again. And it's just getting over that hurdle of going from being extraordinarily cautious and basically being based inside to, like, are we going to now be embracing all of these other elements that are opening up? Or is it actually just going to be too anxiety-inducing?
Well, and did I really spend 3 months without a single hug from a person so that I can just go and catch coronavirus in a pub? Is exactly. that the point? Speaking of pubs, I'm going to open a bottle of wine.
Mm.
It's already open. So this is, oh, what a beautiful colour. This is an orange wine.
This is the summer of orange
this
wine,
This is the summer
right?
of orange wine. And actually, this is one that Lindsay Holland recommended to me, and I ordered it on Shop Cuvée because they had a 10% off something, whatever. Anyway, so I bulk ordered orange wine. It is Calcareous Vini di Pietra Bianchi. It's from Puglia. It comes in a litre bottle, which normally I would appreciate, but when you live alone is quite punchy, which is why it's already open. But it is just the loveliest summer drink. It's super refreshing, but it's quite fruity. It's fruitier than a white wine, but in a delicious way, because I like a dry, quite crisp white. I don't like anything too perfumey. I mean, it's just heaven. Such a beautiful colour. It comes in this gorgeous bottle with the label that kind of looks like the periodic table. I brought a bottle of this to a socially distanced picnic that we had in Frankie's garden last week. With some friends of ours, and went down a tree, didn't it?
Well, I don't know. I didn't drink it, but with our fellow guests,
it went down well with them.
It went down a treat. If anyone's not drinking, can I just recommend?
Please do. You need to start doing non-alcoholic drinks recommendations.
I do. So we had a little socially distant bridal shower for our friend who was meant to be getting married last week. So I bought a bottle of Prosecco because, you know, celebratory. And I wanted to get in on the action. So I found a non-alcoholic Prosecco from Freyssinet. Bought a mini bottle, £2 from my local Tesco's. Lovely. Didn't taste like Prosecco. Tasted like fizzy apple juice. But nevertheless, it was delicious cold. Looked like Prosecco. So I did feel like I was joining in. And I enjoyed it.
When you say Freyssinet, in my head, I sing, it's our secret Freyssinet.
What's that?
You know the Tresemme advert? Because it was only for professionals.
It's not for you, it's for professionals.
It's our secret Tresemme Freyssinet.
Yeah.
Right? It really works.
That was Ricardo from The Salon. Do you remember
him? Yes.
I loved The Salon when I was at school.
I feel like a good jingle really gives an advert longevity. Because here I am, however many years later. And Ricardo's made it onto the podcast, you know? Wonder what he's up to. Hope he's well. Anyway, what have you been reading this week, Franks?
So, I have read, it was actually a letter, open letter, on The Telegraph. And it's called, The Lockdown is Turning Back the Clock on Women's Lives in Britain. And this is signed by lots and lots of people, including Jane Shepherdson, Mary Porters, Dame Helena Morrissey, Baroness Blackwell, and loads more. But basically, it makes the point that lockdown has had a disproportionately negative effect on women, mainly in terms of their jobs and their finances. So I'm just going to read out a few points and stats from the letter. It's quite a short letter, but it's very impactful and it's very information rich. So, more women are having to take furlough or unpaid leave to care for family members during lockdown. A study from the Resolution Foundation found that women were more likely, or have been more likely than men, to work in sectors that have shut down during the pandemic. The Institute of Fiscal Studies says mothers are more likely than fathers to have lost or quit their jobs. And one in four women who are pregnant or on maternity leave during the pandemic have experienced unfair treatment at work, either being singled out for furlough or for redundancy. And it's basically saying that the damage that this has done and is still doing to women is going to be setting us back decades. So this sort of struck a chord with me. I mean, this is going to strike a chord with all women. But this struck a chord with me because I don't have kids to look after, apart from one in my tummy, but he's quite easy to look after at the moment. I haven't had to sacrifice my job because of childcare. I was speaking to a couple of friends at the beginning of the week who were telling me that they haven't been able to work really at all because they haven't been able to find any childcare, and it's been completely prohibitive for them. Even though I don't have that childcare aspect, I have still found myself slipping into this role of, I was explaining it to you earlier, kind of like a 1950s housewife, because, I mean, my job has taken much more of a hit than Ben's. At least one of us is earning, thank God. However, as the person in the relationship who is financially struggling more, which according to the stats is in majority the case for women, I've then become basically the cleaner, the cook, the person that's keeping the house running and in order, which I never was before when I was earning on a little bit more of an even keel. We had a cleaner, I guess we ate out more, we got takeaways more. So it's sort of, the last few months has really, I've almost become much more domesticated, which is such a bit of a weird thing to sort of get your head around. And initially, I almost enjoyed it because it was something productive to do. When no work was coming in, it's horrible not having anything to do and you feel really useless. So I was like, okay, well, at least I can make sure the shopping's done. I can cook some meals. I can make sure the house is spick and span. And also it helps appease your, well, it helped appease my guilt of not contributing to anything because I couldn't contribute financially in the way that I had been doing. And there's still, I hate to say that there's some elements that I have enjoyed and almost still do enjoy.
Like what?
Well, I mean, it's nice being able to cook from scratch. Not even from scratch. It sounds like I'm making elaborate meals. I'm not.
Well, I mean, lest we forget that you eat frozen mashed potato. The laziest thing I've ever heard in my life. But
also, it's so convenient. But, like, I've been making my own mashed potato.
Delighted now, to hear it.
Since the pandemic. I've baked some cakes. Like, that element of it I have enjoyed. And I haven't been a baker before, and I wasn't hugely interested in the kitchen before. So actually that has been quite nice. You know, I like a clean house, and it's not that I particularly enjoy cleaning. I just like the results of cleaning, and I do like to have a very clean, organised space. And there is something that gives you a little bit of a thrill knowing that you have provided something nice for somebody. But it's like cooking for your friends and your loved ones, isn't it? It's nice. It's like an act of love. It's an act of care that just makes you feel really, really nice. It's bringing joy to somebody else. So those elements totally I have enjoyed. You sort of are enjoying them and then you're thinking, oh God, does this make me a bad feminist? Because there's parts of me that are quite enjoying being in the kitchen. And am I setting back women years and years and years by doing this and by admitting that I kind of enjoy doing this? But then it's scary to think I've put myself in this position, and as we were saying, if the economy doesn't buck itself up, I don't know how long I'm going to potentially be in this position for. And that's a little bit of a scary thought. And I can just imagine for families who have children and it has fallen to the woman to look after the kids, the prospect of schools not going back or your normal childcare not kicking in the near future, or if it does kick in, what capacity that's kicking in, and whether that's still going to have a massive effect on them and their careers, is a scary thought.
That chasm between men and women has always been there. The gender pay gap is hugely documented and completely real, and only increases after women have children, because as they do often take on the bulk of childcare duties, women will often not go back to a 5-day week, or they'll want to work from home. They'll be dashing out to do the school run in the morning or pick up from nursery in the evening. It can be difficult for women to just transition back to a full 5-day week, 9 to 5, or whatever the hours are. So that gap only increases. There was a study that showed that mothers are doing 31 hours more housework now than they were before the pandemic. Fathers are doing more, but the mothers are doing 12 hours more on average than the fathers. So everyone's doing more work, but that's a huge chasm. I wonder if for you, there must be this kind of moment of panic, because not only are you in a pandemic where your industry, our industry, is very hard hit? So much of what we do isn't essential. So as we head into a recession, people are going to be commissioning less. Fashion brands have been really hard hit. And also a lot of people are furloughed. A lot of people are losing their jobs. So potentially the market will be even more saturated after this. So that's something I'm experiencing with you, that suddenly freelance life seems very scary without any of the security of a contract and healthcare and sick pay. But also you're pregnant, which unfortunately is always going to throw up those questions for you as well, because it is the age old question for women. How am I going to balance everything? And the having it all myth is a complete myth. So how are you going to be the mother that you want to be, have the life that you want to have the career that you want to have the relationship with your husband that you want to have? How are you going to juggle all those things? Also, unfortunately, in our society, money is so important, and we look at money as the important thing. And men who are primarily the breadwinners in male-female families are elevated to this position of superiority because they're bringing in the money. Raising children is such an important thing, but A, we don't put it on a level because it doesn't pay the mortgage, but B, yes, you're right, we also, as feminists, have this inner struggle because I wasn't raised to give up my job and stay at home and raise children. My mother has always worked and has a PhD in feminist playwriting. I mean, I'm not pregnant, but I would like children one day. And it's something I think about all the time because she was a working mother. We were talking about this actually on a socially distance walk yesterday. Even when we met at university and you talk about your childhoods and what your life was like, everyone always talks about whether or not their mothers worked or were at home. We've had that conversation with friends. I've always had that conversation with friends and had it throughout school of, oh, was that really difficult for you that you'd get home from school and your mum wasn't in yet? Was that really difficult for you that she couldn't come to every sports day? And both of my parents were very there and very present, and I was always really well looked after. And we never talk about working fathers. Nobody's ever said to me, oh, was your father not at home? Because of course he wouldn't be. Although actually, both of my parents went part-time when I was born to do shared childcare. But that's still unusual, even though we have paternity leave now, that's still unusual to have a father take on childcare duties in that way. It's kind of a given that it's your life that's going to have to shift. And that must be a really weird position for you to be in, to be looking ahead and be really excited, but feel really odd that this career that you've been working on for 15 years, if you include uni, where you were single-minded and that this was what you were going to do, that you're kind of having to put that on a back burner for a while.
And I guess this whole pandemic situation has brought all of those feelings forward. And actually, you were telling me about somebody you know who's meant to be going back to work in September, but the nursery is oversubscribed because they're having to take less children because of social distancing measures. So her child can't go to nursery in September, which means she then can't go back to work.
They've said it will be the following September. So, you know, what's she going to do? And I mean, this is a friend of a friend, but what's she going to do for the year? Give up her job, give up her career? She can't afford private childcare. The awful thing as well is that we always compare childcare costs to a woman's salary. And we don't compare it to the household salary and think, can we afford that? No, you compare it to the woman's salary and you think, oh, is it worth her going back to work? Oh, no, probably not, if her salary is not much higher than the childcare. Sorry? When do women stop being people who have creative desires and passions and need fulfillment from their own successes? You're suddenly just expected to be able to get all the fulfillment you need from being a mother. And I'm sure for some people that's possible. There's nothing wrong with that. But there's also nothing wrong with wanting to go back to work and being passionate about your career.
But then this is the arse of the situation, because on one hand, you are thinking, okay, well, I'm expected to be the mum that's always there and always around, do the baking, do the crafting, do all of that stuff that you're meant to suddenly find incredibly enjoyable when you're a mother, and keep the house together. Yet, housewives, which is such a horrible term, it's like you're a house elf, tethered to the kitchen.
But also wife, defining characteristic, wife.
Yeah, are, I think, poorly thought of in society. So my mum was predominantly a stay-at-home mum. She did have periods where she worked, but she gave up her career when she had children. And she was in that sort of first generation where women did have the choice to work and it was all incredibly liberating. She chose to stay at home. I just always remember her saying, God, I just feel like a second class citizen. Whenever we go to dinner parties or I meet people who aren't in the same boat as me and they ask what I do and I explain, it's like, oh, you're just that, are you? On the flip side of that, you go out and you manage to have this amazing career and you're smashing it at work, but then I feel that there is still judgment if you employ somebody to look after your children. So you're just like, well, I can't win here, can I? What am I meant to do? It's amazing that we've got all of this choice and that we don't just have one path that we have to go to, but actually in reality, do we have so much of a choice? Is it just that we're trying to now sort of do everything and feeling constantly guilty and feeling constantly judged? And then people will say, well, but you chose to have children. No, the family, couple
and so did,
chose to have children.
And so did Ben. But will he get shamed if you have a nanny? Will he have people ask at 6 p.m. on a work night, oh, you're not going to nip home? Who's looking after the children?
Exactly. And that's, it's just this horrendous double standard. And I just think this whole, things have felt so progressive in the feminist movement, and in some areas, smash that glass ceiling and come on leaps and bounds. Obviously, there's so much work still to do. But I do feel like this lockdown has really highlighted that actually, when the shit hits the fan, we are still regressing into those gender stereotype dynamics where the man is going to get the bacon and the woman is cooking it for breakfast.
What lockdown has done is highlight that imbalance and reveal it for what it really is. A lot of women, certainly women I know, were just making it work. Yes, they were doing more of the cleaning, and yes, they were doing more school runs and more breakfast and this and that before dashing to the office. And yes, they were the ones leaving the office early to go and pick up the kids or speaking to the nanny or speaking to the school on the phone. But they were making it work because that is what they had to do to be able to have their careers and have their children. And I think what lockdown has done, it's just revealed how much more women were doing.
And just expected to. I think, honestly, until we actually have a giant societal shift and an economic shift whereby women and men are paid the same for the same job, that gender pay gap does not exist. Where raising a family and looking after your children and raising the next generation who are going to be running this world, which is a pretty important job and a pretty big responsibility, until that is put on an even keel as making money, I don't see this truly authentically moving on and as being able to be seen on an equal level. So I really fucking hope that happens at some point.
Maybe in the next 4 months.
Exactly. If that could happen by November, I'd be thrilled.
On my side of the sex divide, over here, dating. What in a socially distanced date?
How was that?
Well, it's weird, isn't it? It's weird because social distancing is odd anyway, because it's kind of awkward and you just want to have a hug. And you don't have any of that leaning in together or sharing food. Those little intimacies that are so usual with friends and family. Mm. On a date, a first date is already awkward. You don't know each other. It's a complete stranger that you're trying out, basically. So first dates are already the worst. So I would normally choose a pub that is noisy and busy. So you have background noise, you've got people watching. One of you heads off to the bar, you can go to the loo if you want to just excuse yourself for a second. And then also it creates natural endings to the date. So you have a drink and then whoever didn't buy the first round says, do you want another drink? And it offers an opportunity to end the date there, or you stay on for another drink. It gives you nice bookends. And actually, if the date's going well, maybe after the first or the second drink, someone will suggest, actually, are you hungry? Should we get something to eat? And you can then move on to a restaurant, have dinner. There's none of that now. You can't lean over a table. You're not sharing food. You can't brush their arm or walk really close together, kind of almost touching as you walk down the street. None of those lovely little frisson moments. You're just really awkwardly far apart. You're worrying the whole time about where they've been. And how careful they're being, and are they wearing a mask in the supermarket, and how often do they sanitise their hands? You're in a park, so you're either in bright, bright daylight, which is weird because you're on a day date, which is not really my vibe, or you're in the lovely dusk hours, but actually that's quite quick, and then it's just dark. As I discovered, parks get very dark. So then you're in a pitch black park with a stranger. Is that a position I would normally put myself in? No. Fortunately, I was surrounded by a hella other people on awkward socially distanced dates. So it was very busy in the park. Everyone was sort of at either end of the picnic blanket, staring at each other. Bizarre. But also not even wanting to sit facing each other, because that's how you transfer liquids. So government advice is that you sit side by side. So sitting 2 meters apart, facing away from each other.
Oh God, trying to have a conversation.
Sharing a bottle of wine, but being really careful with the pouring of the bottle of wine.
And then presumably just thinking, in a minute, I'm going to have to tell him I need to excuse myself to go and wee in a bush.
Well, I just had to go home when I needed to wee. That was the end of the day.
That was your bookend.
I was in Clissold Park. It's really hard to wee in a bush there. Slash, all the men are doing it. And it smells absolutely disgusting around this one particular tree, especially in the hot weather. That was not going to be me. So, no. We shared a bottle of wine. And then actually we had a beer each. And then I went home because I needed to wee. Obviously, you have to date geographically also, because Bath might as well be China, for all that I can travel there for a day.
Exactly.
So, I mean, anyone in South London? Absolutely not. I haven't seen my sister since March, because she lives in Clapham. So, I can't date anyone who doesn't live in my vicinity. I don't have a car. I need to be able to walk there, but also I need to be able to walk there, have a date, walk home, all within the few hours that I can go without needing a wee.
Yeah.
And if I'm drinking wine and or beer, oof, tricky.
So difficult. Actually, this was a blind date setup.
Yeah, this was a setup.
But have you found the dating apps? Because I remember when we spoke about dating at the beginning of lockdown, people were talking about maybe doing Zoom dates and all of that. Has that materialised? What's the vibe been?
Hinge now has a video dating feature thing. So you can do a video call as your first date. Because meeting in person, if you're not going to like the person, it's tricky. You're not just popping into a pub for one drink. It's a bit more hassle. It's a bit more difficult. And also, it's a bit more dangerous during the pandemic. So that set up, I don't know. Some people have really just embraced the fact that we're now allowed to have sex with people again and gone straight in there, which I respect. I'd be very concerned about the liquids, personally. You'd have to do some real vetting. I guess it's just like checking that somebody's STD check is up to scratch. But now you're checking that they don't have coronavirus. So
in addition,
we're just adding it to the list of things that you could catch.
We were talking about feeling nervous about having a meal in a restaurant. How about kissing somebody? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, obviously I'm going to have to do it at some point. This date was lovely, but wasn't for me. So that's not something that's come up because I didn't want to have a snog. At some point, I'm going to want to snog someone. Mm. Hopefully, please let me find someone I want to snog. And it's nuts to just, you can't expect all single people to just be involuntarily celibate because of a pandemic. But then it does feel irresponsible. You can't just walk around snogging all sorts of people.
Mm.
It's very bizarre. But then I was in the pharmacy yesterday. We'd been on a walk. I was behind a girl. She ordered the morning after pill. I was buying blister plasters. So I think that about sums up my relationship status, doesn't it? At least somebody's getting some. But I don't know if people are going to potentially fast-track relationships, I think, is what might happen.
Right.
And not necessarily relationships that will endure past the end of lockdown. They might, who knows, but I do think if you met someone who you fancied and you slept with them and the sex was good, you wouldn't be like, ah, I'll keep my options open. You'd probably be like, let's turn this into a little lockdown love affair.
Yeah.
And have loads of sex and just enjoy that first glow of a relationship and then reassess when you're allowed back out into the world and you're allowed to go to pubs. Because you can't just be sleeping around, can you?
No. I mean, this is going to really put the cloches on anyone who likes to put it around, I'd imagine.
I'd be absolutely terrified. If I'm terrified to snog someone, imagine having someone sleeping in my bed. I feel like the first time I let someone into my house, after lockdown is going to feel incredibly bizarre.
Is it going to make people more discerning? I mean, I was always one for just doing a, I call it a pity snog, which is really patronising. But when people lent in,
I'm sure
snog,
people have pity snogged us as well. So I'm
sure they have. But I just felt like I couldn't duck away from it. I just went with it. However, that was under normal circumstances. So in this current climate, would I be doing that? No. I'd be thinking, well, no, if I really don't like you, do I want to have that snog? Do I really want to sleep with you? I know I've had some wine. And normally I might be thinking, oh, why not? But it surely is going to make you think twice, right?
Well, my last date before the lockdown was a second date. And I had already established over the course of the second day that I didn't want to go on a third date. He went for a snog at the end and I swerved him and went for a hug because I was like, hello, pandemic. That is quite a big commitment to me. What if I then had to quarantine for 2 weeks? What if I got really ill? All for a rubbish snog. Disaster. I mean, it might have been a great snog. I'm a judgmental cow, obviously. But anyway, just to make myself feel slightly better, though, I did notice that last week something was trending on Twitter. Channel 4 show called Dogging Tales.
Oh, I caught a bit of that.
Oh, my God. Maybe dogging is the future because you're hermetically sealed inside your car and other people are just watching. I mean, there's screens, there's distancing.
I know, part of it starts to make a little bit more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, until you hear what some of these people are saying. They were all wearing really weird animal masks, but one man thought his penis was too big for any condom he'd ever found.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I thought they made special ones for big willies.
Yeah, I mean, A, he doesn't have a big willy. B, he's never fucking tried. He was just giving it a lot of that. You know the kind. But it was a special show. And if anything, actually, it really put me off sex for a while.
Okay.
So if I get to the point where I'm starting to feel a bit anxious about dating and like, when will I next be able to have a snog? I might just watch Dogging Tales to just deaden that need for a while.
Remove that impulse from you.
It's a really nice contraceptive for anyone who needs one.
Okay, great. That's such a top tip.
Frenu, what are your recommendations this week?
Oh, okay. So I'm going to start with a book I'm reading, which is called Queenie. And it's by Candice Carty-Williams. I'm behind the times with this one because it was released last year to huge critical acclaim. But I've been reading it this week and I absolutely love it. So it's fiction. It is the story of Queenie, who's in her mid-20s. She lives in London and she's going through a painful breakup. And you follow her trying to deal with it. Not dealing with it particularly well. It's a light book in a way. It's incredibly readable, but it also discusses racism, sexual assault, and the class divide in a very thought-provoking, powerful way. I highly, highly recommend reading it. It's had a million bajillion great reviews. There's absolutely no doubt as to why. It is really, really good.
Can I see your cover? What's the cover?
Hot pink.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. It's really good. What's the back cover?
Also hot pink.
The reason I ask is because Waterstones are now trialling displaying books with the back cover facing forward.
What?
Because I actually went into a bookshop at the weekend.
OMG.
An actual real-life bookshop is the only non-food shop that I've been into since shops reopened. But then I panicked because I was like, I can't pick up the books and read the back of them to find out what I want to buy because I can't touch all those books because then they're supposed to quarantine the books or clean them down or something. Because if everyone's walking around touching books and putting them back, it's not safe. So I did buy a book, but delighted to hear that Waterstones are now going to be displaying them with the back facing forward. So you can just read the back and you only need to pick up what you actually want to buy.
I hadn't even thought of that, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Well, and also this means, obviously, never judge a book by its cover. So it means that you're not going to just be drawn in by an illustration that you love or a picture that feels appealing. You'll actually read what the heck the book's about. Brilliant. My second recommendation is a recipe. It's from Jamie Oliver and it's his 5 spiced salmon tacos.
Salmon?
Salmon.
I thought you'd mispronounce summer.
No, as in the fish, a salmon taco.
Is it a soft shell, hard shell?
Yeah, soft shell. You can just, we actually use tortilla wraps because I couldn't find taco shells and it was fine. It's super quick. It's a good midweek meal. And it's perfect for the summer. It's fresh. Obviously, it's got a bit of a Mexican vibe going on.
I was going to say, I actually made salmon tacos when I was cooking my way around the world.
No way.
For my Zoom dinner parties for Mexico night.
Ah, there you go.
Because that was the fish I had in the house. And then I made my own guacamole.
Lovely. Yes, I made my own guac and my own salsa. Delicious. Delish. So I would highly, highly, highly recommend that. It's just so quick and easy. If you're having a little outdoor picnic.
Oh, yeah.
You could just wrap those up and then
don't walk too far, though. Salmon doesn't travel very well.
No. Oh, no. It was like when you got tuna sandwiches in your lunchbox at school. Mm. Oof. And then you'd lift the lid.
Well, or in any office that I've ever worked in when anyone's decided it's okay to microwave fish.
Not okay.
And it's unacceptable. Great. Sounds delicious.
It is. Try it. Well, you have. But whoever hasn't tried it yet, try it. Chazzy, what are your recs?
First of all, the book that I bought in the IRL bookshop, because I had to choose from the front cover and I knew that I wanted to read this book and that it was good without reading the back cover. It is Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo.
I've just ordered that. It's just arrived.
Have you? Oh,
yeah. Really excited.
It won the Booker Prize in 2019 and it follows 12 different women, most of whom are Black British women, over a course of decades, I think, actually. But it's kind of how their lives interlink, but then it's looking at their own stories. It's a real celebration of women, but it also tackles the realities of women. Domestic violence, sexual assault, the pay gap actually and being held back at work. It also discusses racism, prejudice, class system actually that you were talking about. And it's just really compelling because of the way it's written, the way it's actually typed, the way the sentences are structured. It sets a tempo, it sets a pace that isn't just like reading a traditional novel, which I'm really enjoying actually. When I first started, it took me a minute to adjust to reading that way, if that makes sense. But I think actually gives it more of a voice and it means that you read it in a certain way. I think it kind of controls the narrative more. My second recommendation is a watch. It is a show called Trigonometry.
Mm.
It's a BBC Two and there are 8 episodes and I just stumbled across it on iPlayer. It's British, and the 3 central characters, 2 of them are a couple, and then they need to make a bit of extra money, so they rent out their spare room.
Yes, I've seen a trailer for this.
Yeah, so it's a really modern look at polygamy. Interesting, actually, because I'm seeing a lot of guys on dating apps at the moment who say that they practice ethical non-monogamy.
Right.
So it's clearly a running theme. Anyway, this is like nothing I've seen that's discussed polygamy. I feel like it's normally done in a certain way. It's often made to feel very weird, very foreign from our own realities. Actually, I feel like I've mostly seen documentaries or fictionalized shows about polygamy set in America.
Yeah, and it's like cults.
Yeah, and it's often kind of tied in with religion.
Mm.
This is completely different. It's a young British couple who I can completely relate to. It's a young woman. She moves in with them. Their lives, I think because it's set in London as well, personally, I could see so many parallels. And it's just a completely different take. And it's beautiful. I've only watched 3 of the 8 episodes because I'm trying to pace myself and not binge it all in one go because I'm really enjoying it. It's beautifully written. It's incredibly acted. Actually, the thing that drew me to it in the first place is that the picture on iPlayer, I was like, isn't that? And one of the actors used to live in my flat before me.
No way.
So when I came to view my flat, I didn't recognise her, but I met her and then I realised afterwards that she was this actor. So that is the peculiar reason that I clicked on it, because I hadn't heard about it. And I haven't heard people talking about it, actually, but I think it's wonderful. So I don't know why they're not. And they should. It's called Trigonometry. All episodes are on iPlayer right now. Give it a go.
Amazing. I really will. Thanks, Chaz.
Thank you.
Now, look, my laptop's about to die.
Okay.
So this is our bookend to say it's the end of the podcast.
Well, that's sad.
But it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you like what you hear, please do subscribe, rate and review, and tell your friends. You can also find us in written format via our weekly newsletter, which lands every Sunday. And you can sign up to that at thewingwoman.co.uk.
Plus, you can follow us on social media. Frankie is at Frankie Gradden. I'm at Charlie Gowans. And collectively, we're at thewingwoman_. We'll be back next Friday. You might have noticed Friday is the new podcast day. So sorry if you were looking for it midweek. We've had to do a bit of a rejig around our new freelance/lockdown schedules. So we'll see you next Friday.
Until then, bye.